Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kosh Cast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex and Bernie Uche is here.
Hello, Alex.
How are you, my man?
I'm good. I think it's been too long since we've done this, but we probably say that between every episode. I think we just forget. I think that's like the stage of life we're at where we just forget.
I mean, listen, we've made this excuse before. Everyone now has small children, so it's difficult. But also, I feel like we're all, and this is not necessarily a great thing to admit on a podcast, let alone at the beginning of one, we're all watching as little football as we've ever watched.
Yes.
And so, you know, the more you're watching, the more there, you kind of need to talk about it to get things off your chest, what have you. And just like some weeks, I've seen like, maybe a game, and so it's like, well, I can't honestly podcast this week. I just haven't
you're coming into this era, which is, I'm sad for you because it's probably like one of the most amazing times to be an Arsenal fan, and you can't really immerse yourself in it fully. But also, you're beating teams 5-0 every week is probably boring. So why come pot about it?
Yeah, it's boring. So it's rubbish. Anyway,
6-0 this weekend.
Was it 6 or 7? Wait,
I think it was 6. Like halftime was like 5 or some bullshit. I had to turn it off at six.
I just don't know. Who are they playing? Sheffield United. Sheffield United, they've got more points than the worst team in the Premier League ever, trademark Derby, mm-hmm. in whatever year that was, Robbie Savage, but. I don't know that they're any better than them. They are horrendous.
You know, I have a theory. I don't know if it's correct, but, and we'll get to this later, but Ole Solskjaer said that the league has actually gotten better. Like before it was like Man United, Arsenal, you can make a case for Chelsea, Liverpool some years, whatever. But now like he's saying like the top 10 teams are all really good. But like, I feel like the bottom drop off is worse. And I don't know if it's just like nostalgia, but it feels really, really bad to me.
I feel like, you know what I think it might be, is that before you could get promoted team, I don't know. You remember when Ipswich came up and they were good, for example? Mm-hmm. And like most of the league was also dross. So they just could blend in with all the other dross, mm-hmm. you know? Whereas now most of the league is actually pretty decent. And, you know, like a club like Bournemouth has, you know, a fancy Basque manager and proper tactics and stuff and like clever recruitment. So mm-hmm. you come up from the Championship, like unless you've got some money already and you're on it, or you've been relegated a couple of times and you know what you're doing and you've got a strong squad, like the gap between you as Luton, who just got promoted kind of by accident, and, you know, lower middle half, what am I even saying? Lower mm-hmm. half teams in the Premier League is huge.
See, I understand where you're going with this. I really, really do. But like, here's my problem. Remember when Sunderland came up, whenever that year was, and like Kevin Phillips scored 30 goals, him and Niall Quinn.
Yeah.
Like, remember when Man City first came up and they had like Sean Gauthier and Paul Dickov, I think, and a bunch of them. Paulo Wanchope as well. Like, I don't know. I feel like the transfer budgets were lower, but they just had better players on those teams. Like you just mentioned, Ipswich had Finidi George. They had, I think, Jimmy Bullard at that point. Matt Holland was there.
Matt Holland was there.
And they had Finidi George. And they had they ended up signing, was it not Milan Baroš? But there was a Liverpool striker that they brought into the team at that point when they came up.
That's going to bug me. They had a very young Darren Bent and a Marcus Bent.
Did they have both Bents?
I think they had both Bents, possibly at different points.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, I look at Burnley coming up and, like, company thinks he can come and do tiki-taka nonsense. I can't, like, this is very, very bad, okay? When I'm watching Burnley, I know their players. When I don't watch Burnley, I forget everyone on their team.
You've got more than me. When I watch them, I still don't know. But you know what? I'm actually quite thankful for Vincent Kompany doing what he's done, because know, sometimes your club will get linked with a player in the Belgium, whatever it's called, Juniper Pro League or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, oh, that might be interesting. But then you watch, you look at the fact that Burnley signed a whole bunch of those guys from Belgium, smashed the championship, mm-hmm. and then got promoted, and they are useless. They're like, yeah, but let those Belgian guys go off somewhere else first before anyone makes a,
this is true.
Makes a signing.
This is true. I'm just looking at like Bradford in the 99, like
Dean 2000
season. Look, man, that was a big name back then. Like,
it was a funny name back then. It still is.
Oh my God. Neville Southall even came back to go and goal. Like, what are we talking kidding. About? I think the bottom tier was better.
Name any tier. Other Bradford player. Oh, wait, you know what? Know. You know who they had? Didn't they have Carboni for a minute?
They brought him from, oh my God, from Sheffield. No, because he got the, where was he? He was at Sheffield Wednesday, right? He pushed the ref.
No, Di Canio pushed the ref.
Carboni had something. No, they fight with his own manager. They had Stan Collymore that year.
It was, really? Jesus.
So hold on. This is their, what season is this? 2000, 2001, okay?
Here's
who they have. Gary Walsh, Ian Nolan, Andy Myers, Stuart McCall, David Weatherall, Gareth Wally, Jamie Lawrence, Robbie Blake, Ashley Ward, Benito Carboni, Peter Beagrie, okay. Yeah. Robert Molinar, Matt Clark, Lee Sharp, Aiden Davison, Gunnar Halle.
Yeah.
I remember that name for no other reason. I just remember his name.
Oh, he's in Vikings.
Gary Lockie, Dean Saunders, Wayne Jacobs. Why did I think that's Stan Collymore? He left Oviedo. They had him the season before.
Stan Collymore played for Real Oviedo. I mean, that's just good stuff.
Nah, the league was better. The bottom teams were better then.
I don't think you're right, but I'm enjoying it anyway.
I am
also enjoying is Chris Wilder just like losing his mind. Did you see the sandwich stuff?
What was that? I didn't really get the full context of it.
He went to complain about a referee after a match a couple of weeks ago. And the ref, according to Wilder, the ref was eating a sandwich when he arrived and continued eating the sandwich while Wilder was talking to him, which he found very disrespectful.
I mean, the referee's got to eat, man. Let the man eat. I understand it.
He just run around for 90 minutes. The man needs some carbs.
No, he's got to let that one go. He's got to let that one go. I'm sorry. Refs get too much abuse as is. They can't eat now? Come on, bro. I
know. Speaking of things that used to be better in the past, do you want to talk about Champions League for a minute?
Yes.
Because we're on the brink of a new Champions League. And I'm wondering if it might have come at the right time, because I personally have never cared less about this competition, which I find very sad.
Yeah, because first time you're in it in like years and you don't care.
No, I don't. I think Arsenal have a very good chance of winning it, but I am finding it hard to care about the competition as a whole.
Oh, don't do that to yourself. Don't do that. You just got back in. Why do this thing of raising your expectations already?
I don't care if it happens or not. That's the thing. I just think they have a decent chance.
Give it a year, man. Oh, gosh. That's funny.
But yeah, like, I've really struggled to motivate myself to watch. In fact, I don't think I watched any of the group stage. And that's not to say there weren't some good games, because there were. But like, I just have struggled to find any motivation to watch that. And then I watched the Bayern Munich game this week because I was like, "Can I? Let's see if they can turn this around."
Mm-hmm. And which I think we all knew they were going to.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, I mean, DJ Tommy T is bad, but like, I think they would have pulled that off. But then again, if they didn't, you wouldn't have been wholly surprised either.
No, it's just especially given he picked Eric Dier over Kim Min Jae, which is
my incredible. My thing. That's honestly. Is he married?
Who?
Tommy Tuchel.
I don't know.
I want to know if he fell in love with an English woman.
You know what immediately went through my head is that I bet he's divorced. Just based on, you know, okay, you and I were talking about Thierry Henry earlier, and you were asking, like, why hasn't he made it as a good manager? And we were talking about how, like, he can't do the man management stuff, like his ego is just too big. And then you were, and then we were talking about Kate Abdo, obviously, because that's what you do. And and you were like, what about Thierry's wife? And I was like, he's divorced. And I feel like Tuchel has the same personality.
Let's see. He married his wife, with whom he has two daughters. Oh, in April 2022, it was reported Sissy filed for a divorce, citing irreconcilable differences.
There you go.
You know what's bad about me is that, like, after reading that, which confirms what you were saying and our characterization of him, the next word I saw, well, the next thing I saw was Tuchel is a polyglot. And that means he speaks multiple languages. But my brain went, whoa, 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 whoa.
You went to polyamory.
Whoa, Tommy, calm down.
Sissy Tuchel filed for divorce after Tommy Tuchel asked to have another girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
That's very
funny.
He
considers himself an avid reader, namely of crime thriller novels.
That makes sense. He does have a serial killer sort of vibe.
Guess his music choice is.
He strikes me as someone who would be into... it's either going to be something quite niche or something really naff. So like indie rock or heavy metal. No, like electronic. EDM.
I don't have the... Basically, they translated it from German into he likes rock music.
Okay.
And hip-hop.
That's...
I don't know if I like hip-hop anymore.
That's like... You know what that means? It's like he's got two preset radio stations in his car. And they're just like the two biggest radio stations. One does rock, one does hip-hop.
As much as I love Eminem... I feel like this may be the limit for DJ Tommy T and his hip hop love. It might just be Eminem and that's it. Because if I hear him listening to Mos Def, I don't know. I might just throw a fit. I don't know if I can handle him going into those deep cuts.
You know what though? Remember when he came out for the FA Cup final looking like a member of So Solid Crew?
Yes.
So yes. There might be some garage in there. Some grime.
It's possible.
But okay. Tuchel. So remember when he won the Champions League, he broke his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hopping around on crutches. Mm-hmm. Allegedly, he's broken his toe by kicking something in his team talk before the game. And he was getting all worked up and into it and he kicked something and he thinks he's broken his toe. That might be a good omen for Bayern Munich. When Tuchel breaks a bone. So far, he's 1-1 winning the Champions League.
Someone's got to fight him then and like really beat him up, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, the leg last time.
They came through, Harry Kane. Just for the record, I didn't mute Champions League or anything. And I know, obviously, my timeline is very pro United, but clearly, I used to get everything and I got nothing from any of these games. Nothing. No buzz on the timeline. Nothing. Like, Madrid-Leipzig was close, and I had no idea. Man City only beating Copenhagen 3-1, had no idea. Even, like, PSG, Sociedad. I saw a quote from someone that you were making fun of. I can't remember who it was. That they were like, PSG were 1-0 down in Sociedad, and someone said, there's no place like Sociedad.
I think it was Darren Fletcher.
Was it Darren? I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, he said they were in Sociedad, and the guy was like, "Yeah, there's no such place."
I think you can. I think we should let stuff like that slide. I'm just saying. I understand. Like, not every like Gets brain's gonna go like, where are they anyway? Are they in Betis? No,
San Sebastian, I think, or around there.
See, the fact that I don't know this like is why I'm saying we should let this slide.
So San Sebastian. You don't have to know the city, but you still know, even though you're not sure, you still know that it's not associated with the place.
It's like saying like in Social Chelsea.
Club, isn't it, or something? Like, doesn't Sociedad, hang on, Sociedad means like society or something.
Like the King's Society?
Hang on. Maybe we're no better than Darren.
Royal Society.
There you go. So they're 1-0 down in Royal Society, which is not where you want to be 1-0 down.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah. How are we feeling about Kylian? Finally making the move.
We know it's happening. It hasn't happened yet, but it's just, it's no longer exciting football news to me because even though he rejected them last time, we knew it would happen eventually. He's 25 or whatever it is. Like he had a long time to go. It's not exciting. When the guy was saying tick tack, tick tack, tick tack, like it would have been great for it to happen then because, you know, but. Whatever, man. Also, they've built one of the best squads ever assembled in the history of football on a shoestring. Unbelievable stuff from Florentino. As much as I hate him for Super League and everything else evil that he's ever done, I'm giving the man credit for the way that they've assembled this super team. Mm-hmm. And that new stadium is unbelievable. He's evil, but he's an evil genius, and I have to give him his props.
He's superb. I mean, I'm just looking at the 11 today, right? So you've got Lunin, who's whatever, cost nothing. Fulham Mendy costs 40 like or so. Nacho's free. Rudiger's free. Carvajal was born there. Toni Kroos was like 20, 25 million. Tchouameni was expensive. Camavinga was not. Vinicius was not. Jude Bellingham was.
Yeah.
And Valverde wasn't. So really, in a whole 11, you've got two players who were expensive, one in Mendy who was like a little bit expensive, and then the rest of them were basically free.
Well, but even when you think about
free, but it was completely reasonable.
Even when you think about like Jude Bellingham being 100 million, yes, it's expensive, but like we've seen way bigger transfers, right? Like Coutinho was 150, like, you know, this is Enzo is 120 or whatever. Like the Premier League has destroyed this fee like multiple times over and over again.
Nicolas Pepe was 70 something.
It's not ridiculous in the grand scheme of things. Like it's almost considering the output he's put out, in a way you can say he's undervalued, even though no one is sure with 100 million to me, like if we're being honest about life and stuff like that. But like that's not that crazy in the grand scheme of it all.
If Jude Bellingham stays for 10 years and every other season after this is like half as good as this one has been, you're good. You've done fine.
Look, Declan Rice is 105 million. I think that's a good fee for the output. Jack Grealish is 100 million. I don't think that's a good fee. And Bellingham is the same money.
There's talk about Grealish being kind of on the way out, and maybe that's just people putting two and two together from the fact that he hasn't played much this season. I still think Pep looked at those drunk celebrations and was like, "You are out of my team." But there's some talk.
I can see it. I can see it, and they're not. I mean, they're going to make a huge loss if they sell him because, what is market value? I'd have him just for fun. Like, might as well add another asshole, crazy person to the team. I'd do it. But, you know, it's 100 million. My God. Like, anyway. In terms of your Mbappe question, it's not interesting to me. It's just not interesting at all. Like, what? They're going to win the Champions League? Boo hoo hoo hoo. Like, what do I have to say about that? Nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah. But that's kind of But that's kind of the way the Champions League is going, like to the point that we started making earlier. It's just that, I don't know, something about it, just the intrigue has kind of gone. And maybe part of that is the away goals stuff. I've seen a lot of people talking about this week. Like, getting rid of the away goals rule has really kind of made the knockout rounds less exciting.
I wonder if it's also... this is going to be very weird for me to think about, but there's no Messi, there's no Ronaldo. I know we are not in ourselves the biggest advocates of like star power or anything like that, but like they were staples in this for 10, 15 years, and they did bring magic, whether we like it or not. And is there magic? Like, Man City are ridiculously functional. Yep. We know that's what they are. Erling Haaland is not a magical player. It's just is the best functioning system in world football.
Foden is sprinkling a little fairy dust right now. A little. For City. Well,
yeah. And even then, like, I don't know.
But I'm still not excited about watching a Champions League final because Phil Foden is playing in it. That's not getting me up.
Exactly. That's where I stand. Like, it's Foden. He's going to score a great goal, sure, but most of it's going to be team play that got him there. I don't know. Maybe it's me and my saltiness about the fact that football is very functional and not swashbucklingly entertaining anymore, and we lost two individuals. Let me say, I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. That's killing me.
Maybe the Champions League is actually great, and we're just not seeing it. I don't know. I don't feel like that's the case, but maybe. Speaking of people who seem a little bit out of date, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did a big interview on what's it? The Overlap.
Yeah, they do this like thing, stick to football, where they eat and drink and have a great time.
Yeah. And there was a lot. I don't know if you saw the behind the scenes bit at the beginning of the video, but there was a lot of pie chat.
Yeah, they were eating like this Norwegian stew and pie. And look, I found that the whole thing amazingly fun to watch.
It was good.
I like the format of that, like the restaurants and the vibes and the bands. And I don't know, like when Wrighty was like talking about the glasses on them, I was like, this is fun. Like, I don't know. I'm sitting here. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah. If you haven't seen that, Ian Wright was just schooling Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. Well, actually, he was complimenting Carragher on his glasses and then giving Gary Neville a really hard time for picking glasses that didn't really suit his face.
Yeah. He was going on about like the shape of your head and this. I was like, he's serious.
he was bang on too. As a long time glasses wearer, I mean, you are too. He knows his stuff, Wrighty.
No, I really enjoyed that. But
yeah, but you know, then they got into it with Ole, and I was curious. I know you think that he did a better job than Mr. Eric is doing now, and I think that's pretty indisputable. You have largely been pretty defensive of him and his record while he was at United. So I was curious to see what you made of this, because he kind of went over what went right, what went wrong, and what he was trying to do before he got sacked.
I think there are two things that, like, the first thing that struck me is that, like you were talking, you were kidding around and also serious at the same time, that, like, I think he used to be a good looking guy when he was younger, by the way. Like, I think he has not aged well at all. Like,
no, but I mean, if you've watched Lord of the Rings, you would know that that's the route that goes.
And isn't that like Norse mythology ish anyway? Like, at least Scandinavian. Like, I'm pretty sure. My thing is that, like, listening to it, I love the whole, like, nostalgia. I'm a big nostalgia merchant. I enjoyed all that stuff. I enjoyed the banter with him and Roy Ferguson, Roy Keane, and the whole, like, you know, you missed that chance at Leverkusen. You didn't track back. Like, it also gave me, like, I fully understand why those guys were as good as they were as a team. Mm-hmm. Like, there was something in that dynamic that I fully got it. Like, in that moment where I don't think you get that type of attitude from players these days. Like, I think the Man City players are very, very focused and very determined, you know, on their objective. And I think Liverpool, with the Salah and Mane era, I think even though they hate each other, there's a focus towards excellence that, like, I did feel from those guys. I don't get it with this current team. And he kind of said as much you know, but
he talked about the Gen Z players not wanting responsibility, not wanting to take the captaincy, not wanting to go and give team talks and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That I was like, that's a generational divide. I'm less interested. I think where the 2 points that I felt were, he was right that we came third, we came second, and we felt we had the fourth best squad in the league, which says to me that, like, even you know that, like, you were overachieving how you were doing.
Mm.
He thinks that he would have stabilized the ship, and I have no reason to disagree, but I have no reason to agree with him either. Like, I think that the Ronaldo issue was so big, I don't think he would have stabilized that situation.
Yeah, I don't think they'd have got top four. They weren't getting top four that season. Like, they might have been better off points-wise than they were ultimately, but that's about it.
They were only 6 points off when they sacked him. So, and it felt, when we think about where Man United are now, then felt a lot worse than it was.
Yeah.
Like, it actually, in the grand scheme of things, was not as bad, anywhere near as bad as it is now.
That's true.
So I get where he's going with that. But my argument from day one, as you know, with United fans on Twitter, group chats, was that the Ronaldo signing was a mistake. Because whether people believed the man had tactics or not, he was working towards a certain thing with Greenwood, with Rashford, even with Cavani and the type of forward that he is. It was all about mobility, pressing from the front, but rotating positions, all those things. We all saw it.
Like, he said as much too. He was like, I had a bunch of players who could run and guys who could dig in. So that's what we did.
And I found it very interesting when he said, when we signed Ronaldo, that had to change. And the person who suffered the most was Cavani. Mm-hmm. And he was open and honest about that. And then he basically said, we have to change the way that we defend as a team to compensate for the lack of defending from the front.
Yeah.
I'm like, these are all the same things that I said after three games were a problem. And people in the group chat were telling me, well, who, they don't press anyway. I'm like, where did you get this idea that Solskjaer's teams never press? Like, a lot of the criticism against him was very narratively driven. And the data backs up the alternative. I always felt that, and I always was very candid on Twitter and honest about, like, hey, this is not the case. So for him to say those things, I was like, interesting. Like, you knew what was happening, and when you tried to do something about it, even Ferguson said, stop that. Play that man.
Yeah, that was actually a big thing for him to admit, that, you know, he basically said, you know, Ronaldo came and he wanted to play three games out of four, but when I didn't play him, he would get upset, and so would Sir Alex. And it was one of those things where I'm not even sure he meant to say it. It just kind of came out. And I was like, Jesus Christ. That's not good.
Well, because he said that, because remember, there was a video that came out of Sir Alex talking to
being
one of the UFC fighters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he said, like, you know, you should always play your best players. And, like, he didn't say that to Solskjaer directly. The video came out. And then it's like, what? Like, now you have, and for me, the problem became, and he will never put he always puts the blame on himself, and I was like, why? Like, dig someone out here, because end of the day, you already had half the fan base. I was like, we should win the league, even though that was never possible, in my opinion. And how other half of the fan base saying that you can't win the league because you're a PE teacher. But then you have your manager who you love and respect, and everyone already thinks that, like, you're too subservient to him anyway, slags you off effectively, even though he doesn't do it, but let's just call it that.
Mm.
That then diminishes you in front of the rest of the fans, and you're done. At that point, done. There's no way. It's Ronaldo and Ferguson. You are against them. You're out. It was always going to happen that way for him. So it was when he said that it was effectively, it was the right decision, but it was a mistake. I was like, you're being counterintuitive, but I understand where you're going.
Yes. He said, what did he say? It didn't work out for me. It didn't work out for Cristiano, but it was the right decision at the time. I'm like, well, clearly it wasn't, but yes, I kind of understand what you're trying to say. You're like,
It was the second line that killed me, because he said we probably would have been better off if we didn't sign him, and he probably would have been better off if he didn't sign for us. I was like, then was it? But it was the right decision. Like, Ole, I know that you know that wasn't the right decision. And I don't even believe, even though he said he wanted him, I don't believe it was your decision. Like, I don't. Just say it and let's move on.
He was very clear. The recruitment stuff was actually very interesting. He was very clear that, like, he said he had a veto, the scouting staff had a veto, and the owners had a veto if they weren't comfortable with the player coming in. He also said that the club said no to signing Erling Haaland. And listen, I appreciate that he knew Erling Haaland and he may have well have told them to sign the guy. But part of me thought, like, you can't just accept. He said that he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing, but like, they had their reports on him and they weren't convinced.
The funny thing is, like, this has been known in United circles for a very long time. He actually, when he was Molde manager, had said, I'm going to ring up United. He'd said all this stuff. And, like, so we've all known that. And there were all these, I remember when there were scouts, there's like a scout watch on Twitter and they had been watching him or whatever. He said they had their reports, sure, fine. At the time, his numbers were not the numbers that we see now. They were okay.
Sure.
They then developed to be decent at Molde and then went to Salzburg. Basically, Solskjaer saw the trajectory. They just saw what they saw at that moment. And at that moment, it wasn't the monster. I think that's where they were going. And plus, Greenwood was doing, like, disgusting numbers in the academy. And they probably thought, if he's not better than this guy, what are we doing?
Maybe. That may well be true. But what struck me was that he also said, sometimes, as a manager, you have to sign players where you don't have a bunch of reports on them. And you haven't seen them play and you haven't managed to scout them. Like, towards the beginning of the video, he said this. And then I remembered, and I was like, who is he talking about there? Then I remembered that they spent 25 million on Amad Diallo and however much it was on Palestri, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, so you don't know these guys. You've been, like, I don't know, badgered, but you've been convinced to sign these guys because the scouting department has said so. But you don't have enough power to convince them to sign Erling Haaland?
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're doing this in retrospect, but, like, people knew about Haaland. Clubs knew about Haaland. That's why he had minimum fee release clauses. That's why he went and joined the Red Bull group. Like, they know what they're doing, those guys. It just struck me as, like, and granted, he was an interim manager to start with, but then he got a contract. You would have thought at that point that you would have enough power to get something like that across.
I think the problem with United at that time was, when you think about Erling Haaland was available for 5 million when he first went to them and said, get Erling Haaland, and they said no. He said it was July 2018. Okay, he gave the date. So Mourinho is still there. They have Lukaku.
Mm-hmm.
They have, obviously, Rashford. They still have Martial on the books. There was someone else who was there. Zlatan was coming back from injury.
17, 18? Like, clubs fly these guys all the
time. This is the same club that didn't sign Moises Caicedo because they felt he was young and they couldn't give him a like, there was no reason to play him, was their logic.
I forgot about that momentarily.
So this was how the club was thinking at the time. Why would we spend 5 million, though they spent 10 million on Hannibal, but we'll talk about that. Like, why would you spend 5 million on this kid who, yes, may have potential and probably will demand to play and we can't play him? Like, this was their logic and it made no sense, but that was their logic. Same thing they did with Caicedo, same thing they did with Julian Alvarez, by the way. They had that deal done. Solskjaer had that deal done. Well, so the whole team had the deal done, and then they said, nah, because we need someone who can come and contribute right now. Same thing. He even said with Caicedo, they had it done, but the club decided. And whenever he wants to say it's not him, he says the club.
Yeah.
Decided we need someone who can contribute right now. I'm like, even the Bellingham story, when he tells a story, right? He said Bellingham had his mind made up. He then said Bellingham had told them, I want to play X number of minutes. And then Keane and them cut him off. I'm like, no, let him talk. Because that says to me, you could not guarantee him those minutes.
No, of course he could.
And someone else could. So are you that good at scouting? Can you look at Haaland and go, he's the next guy, fuck Lukaku. Like, you know, this guy's the next guy. Give him the minutes. Bellingham's the next guy. Fuck Pogba. Give him the minutes. Are you? Can you say that? They couldn't. But you can go sign 37-year-old Ronaldo and go tear up your plan.
I mean, yeah. No, none of it made a bunch of sense. I just got the feeling from the interview that, like, he didn't have as much power as he would have liked. But there was also a sense of resignation about it. Like, it just didn't feel like regret that maybe he should have pushed harder for what he wanted. Anyway, it doesn't matter now. It's all academic.
Well, he did say one thing. To your point, he's trying not to be direct. Yeah. They asked him, like, you know, have you had offers? He said he had offers from the US and some other places. And he said a statement where he said, I want to go somewhere where I can do things my way. And I was like, but he said he learned a couple things. Something like he learned a couple things being a manager of Manchester United, and I'm going anywhere. It needs to be a place that I can express myself and do things my way. And I'm like, that speaks to what Alex just talked about. Like, you were being dictated to half the time.
Yeah.
And probably not in the ways that you would have wanted, because otherwise, why give him Donny van de Beek? But
I did enjoy Gary Neville saying, would you be happy in America? And Ole saying, I don't know.
I was like, that's actually a great answer, because I don't know. Eventually, he'll get Inter Miami job and he'll see what happens.
Yeah, 100%. All right, that's enough, Ole. Speaking of managers who are in trouble. Mauricio Pochettino. Chelsea fans have decided that's that. Mm-hmm. Boehly and Baghdadi seem to be hanging on for now. Although there is a rumor going around today, and you might know the guy better than I do, because I think you pay more attention to basketball than I do, but who's the basketball coach that is being linked with Chelsea?
I didn't know there was a basketball coach being linked to Chelsea.
Wait, it's amazing.
I am in. Huh? Not Steve Kerr from Washington, Golden State Warriors.
Yeah. Is he a coach?
He's like not this second, but overall, last 10 years, the best coach in the NBA.
Yeah. So this could be total bollocks, right? But, oh, here it is. But, allegedly, someone on NBC seems to have said that a surprise name on Boehly's list is NBA Golden State Warriors manager Steve Kerr, told Boehly's hoping for a Ted Lasso effect. Just, there is nothing I want more than for Chelsea to appoint a basketball coach.
There's no way. It would be a huge marketing move. There's just no way. No way. Imagine, like, I don't want Ted Lasso come to life. I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it for them. I don't want it for me. I don't want it.
If Mauricio Pochettino gets replaced by a basketball coach, he can never leave the house again. You understand it? Like, you can't. That's mortifying.
Take the money they give you for the sacking and, like, go live on your farm in Argentina and never show your face again. Like, no. Just no way. No.
As a man that desperately needs a move to Serie A.
My quick take on Pochettino is, like, I think he's done. Like, I think he's a spent force at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's his fault altogether. I think the end of Spurs was bad. I think PSG was bad. I don't care if they won a league, it was bad. But I think people get burnt out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, not everyone can last tracks for 26 years, or Pep, like, you know, consistently at the top as he has, or Klopp or Ancelotti. I think he's just done. And I think it's okay. He had a chance to really, like, at Tottenham, do something in that Champions League era. But, like, I just think you got to let him coach Argentina or something and, like, let him rest. I don't know. I'm starting to feel bad for him personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think, like, someone's actually done some analysis on this and figured out that most, like, top managers have give or take 10 years where their ideas are relevant and they're actually, you know, doing well. And Poch had what, 6 or 7 at Spurs? So that's most of it. And then he spent a year doing nothing. And then he just chose badly. Like, anyone could have told you the PSG job was stupid. And now he's chosen badly again. Anyone could have told you the Chelsea job was stupid. So he's basically had, you know, he did well at Southampton and Espanyol or whatever before that. So on the way up, he did well. He chose projects that made sense. And since then, he's just made terrible decisions. And so since the end of the Spurs era, it's basically impossible to know how good he is because the clubs that he's managed have been jokes. And he hasn't had the, I don't know, whether it's force of personality at this point or the ideas to make any real impact on either club.
My theory on Pochettino is that, like, he really, really wanted the Man United job very, very badly. And I think if he had taken, if they had figured out a way to have him as manager a year before Tottenham went bad, I think he would have been this most successful manager at Manchester United post. Like, I think he'd be really good. I think his attitude, the way he likes to play, it would have suited that United ethos at that time. But that ship has sailed. Like, he's now taking any job that he can. And when you just keep getting beaten down and beaten down, like, mentally, it's hard to get back up and like, come up with good new ideas. And now I see what annoys me about Chelsea is they're looking at reading the Guardian article that came out 2 days just ago. The
Amorim and Zerbi thing.
I'm like, what? Like, Amorim, I don't mind the idea of him at Man United in the sense of he's a young manager with good ideas. I don't know anything about him outside of that. So, like, I have no personal attachment either way. So it's fine. Come in. That's cool. That's fine. Chelsea, I don't like the idea. I like the idea of him at Chelsea in a way for similar reason. Young, good ideas. De Zerbi bothers me. Having him linked anywhere. Not because I don't think he's has good tactical acumen. Last season did a good job. This season's work is scary to me. But also, Chelsea literally bought or brought over the entire Brighton backroom staff. Even like they brought like two new guys like last month who are on gardening leave or something. Like, it's almost like they're trying to create the conditions for De Zerbi to succeed. And I'm like, why? Like, this has not worked so far. You've literally bought all their players. You had their former manager. You brought all their directors and their scouts. Why do you think this will work now?
It's very strange. It's very strange. I mean, look, De Zerbi's football is fun. The job he's done at Brighton is excellent. The squad, you could argue, is not built for Europa League plus Premier League. And that's maybe where they're coming a bit unstuck this season. But at the same time, it's really difficult to know whether what he does would translate to, and Chelsea are obviously mid-table and rubbish this season, but would translate to a team that wants to challenge for honours, because it is so principled, it's so dogmatic, it's so uncompromising, and maybe I've just said the same thing 3 times, but you need a bit of flexibility. You just need a bit of flexibility, and I don't know that he has it. Also, he's a bit of a lunatic, which I think after 18 months, 2 years, is probably going to burn him out wherever he goes. But it's also honestly really difficult to picture any manager succeeding at Chelsea in the current circumstances. You almost want someone like an Ancelotti who can come in, quieten all the noise down, ignore all the bullshit, just make the players happy and go with that. Because
I think
there's so much chaos that even if you have good ideas, how are you trying to implement them when you've got 14 players on loan and this one coming in and like Mudrić needs a psychologist and like it's just too much?
They need a trust me, I got this kind of manager.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who that is. I just.
Yeah, there aren't many left anymore.
No, like Zidane, I can't even. Like, he's never taken the job. He's the only one I can think of. I can't think. Someone said Tuchel should come back, and I was like, I think he's been battered and beaten though by his own faults, like Pochettino. So I would not recommend that in any way.
I will say that under Tuchel, for a year to 18 months, they were bloody good. And then it all fell apart, as we knew it would. But for a while, they were really, really good.
Okay, I have an idea. It's another German.
Nagelsmann.
No.
The Flick.
No.
Who?
You give up.
Come on.
I've never seen him at a club, but I look at him and I hear, I got this. Like, I don't know. That's whether he does or not, that's the vibe I get from his face.
It's more I don't give a shit.
Well, he'll be you know what he likes to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can't think of anyone who I just look at and go, this guy can command a room.
No.
Because Boley's a little kid. Like, you need someone to tell Boy, like, shut the fuck up. Like, do not buy Enzo Fernandez for 120 million. I don't need that shit. Like, Graham Potter and the rest of them are like, they could not believe their luck. They came from Brighton. They're like, you have all this money? Sure, bro. Like, you need someone there to be like, I understand your job as director of football. I get it. But I've worked at the biggest clubs in the world. Let me tell you how we should do this.
And honestly, what's astonishing is that they nicked all those Brighton dudes who were used to like scouting hidden gems from, you know, Ecuador and what have you. Mm-hmm. And then those same guys rocked up at Chelsea and are just like being idiots.
Yeah. They basically just said, let's just get all the Brighton guys that like we already scouted and bought for like cheap.
It's very strange. Did
they pay for Caicedo? Like 100 mil?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Plus 60 for Lavia, who hasn't played a game.
Oh my goodness.
Plus 120 for Enzo. No. And 90 for Mudrik. And
wow.
50 for Badiashile, or 40 or 50. And then another 50, 40 or 50 for De Zassi. And 60 for Cucurella.
Mm. Like, no, 50, I don't.
50 for Gusto. Like, it's crazy.
I don't. You know what? The more I think about it, I wouldn't. Firstly, if I'm Amorim, I'd never touch this job.
No.
I wouldn't do it.
No.
It makes no sense for him to do this. It might be worth sticking with Pochettino for another year. And like,
just see what happens.
Yeah, I don't see the upside for any of these young managers. And also for Chelsea, I'm not sure I see the upside as long as they keep basically like just hamstringing these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what I mean when I say it's really hard to envision anyone really having success. Although I'm sure Chelsea fans will be delighted at our suggestion that they keep a manager who we've described as finished. But that's all right.
Can I tell you who I want for a United manager?
Give me a clue.
Amorim.
Oh. Yeah, good clue.
Or Nagelsmann. I got convinced after not being convinced about Nagelsmann. I got convinced when I just sat down and thought about it. And I was like, if you're Ineos and you say that you want finally a style of play, you know you get that from this guy. And you know it's some variation of gegenpress, and there'll be some weird formation that you will see somewhere. Yeah. And underlap, the first time I ever heard of like overlapping center backs was from that guy. Like, you're gonna see something, but in order to make it work for him, you have to overhaul the entire thing.
Yeah, you don't have the players to play Nagel's ball. But the other thing that I would suggest, and again, maybe this is just completely infeasible in modern football, although Liverpool have basically done it, is that I feel like the next club that appoints Nagelsmann has to become the club, Nagelsmann's club. You know, Nagelsmann's moved around a bit, and he's not really, mm-hmm. you don't really associate him with any one club because he's never been anywhere long enough, really. I mean, maybe, mm-hmm. what was his first club? Hoffenheim or something? He was there for
for a bit, yeah.
But you have to let the guy settle in and do 5 to 7 years and just be like, let the guy work regardless of the consequences. You finish 8th to 10th in the first couple of years, you've got to deal with it.
I think, and this is just me, I don't know about what Ineos and owners would do. But I've said it before. I'm okay if you finish eighth. I said this about Arteta when Mohanda was kicking up a fuss. I'm okay if you finish eighth, but I can see the vision.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I can, if I can see the vision, I get it. I'm okay, because that tells me, like, okay, as long as they can help him implement his vision or get the final pieces, it could make sense. Like, Arsenal did that little by little. It wasn't like we finished third and second, let's go win the league now. It's like, well, hold on a second. Like, let's keep building, right?
Yeah.
I can see that in this case, it would mean you overhaul the entire squad, right? Mm-hmm. To play the way he wants to play. But also, you have to let the vision unfold. I don't have see a vision for, with the current guy. I don't know what he's trying to do. I don't know what he wants to do. I don't think he knows what he wants to do. There's no idea. So you might as well get rid of him now, as far as I'm concerned, because there's just nothing to hold on to.
Yep.
So finish eighth all you want. But like, if I can understand the vision, that's fine with me.
If it turned out to be, it's not going to be, but if it turned out to be a Carrick or a McKenna, would you be right with that?
You know the thing about me, I'm a hopeless romantic.
That's why I'm asking.
When it comes to, if it's Michael Carrick, mate, like, I will go full, some people call me Ole sexual. Woo! I'm turning that up, like, up 100. Michael Carrick, mate? Nah, I'll go nuts. I'll go nuts. I want Ruud van Nistelrooy as my manager, if possible. I'm waiting for Robin van Persie to complete his coaching badges to come in. Like, I would have Rooney as interim manager tomorrow.
Right? Just get them all in.
I am very nostalgia bait. You can get me with anything. I'm there.
Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of, you brought up Arteta a minute ago. You have to wrap in a minute, but I do feel I owe him a bit of an apology. I still think largely is a bit bellend, but his Havertz vision is coming to fruition. And honestly, I didn't see it. I don't think any of us saw it. It's happening. And fair play to the guy, because he's made it happen. It's taken half a season, but like, yeah, it's working.
I still don't understand how it's working. But like, you know what? Maybe that's why he is a genius and we're just knobs.
Like, yeah, basically.
Over here. But
basically.
Again, my thing, I even if we say that the vision is working, I get it. But like, I still don't know if you spend 65 million on a Havertz to do this weird goal scoring role and not win the league. Like, I don't know. It's like, what is the idea? Like,
I think they might still win the league. It's going to be difficult, but we'll see. But I think if you look at it more in terms of who Arsenal have the best defense and the best attack in the league right now.
Yes.
And Havertz at this point is contributing to both of those things. His work off the ball, his defensive work has been outstanding, and the attacking stuff has finally started to click. Arsenal are controlling games, like squeezing the life out of games in the way that only really City have done before them. Mm-hmm. They were struggling to score goals earlier in the season, but they were creating the chances. They were just not finishing properly. And it's one of those things too, where last season they flew out the traps, both in terms of early in games and early in the season, and then burnt out. And this season mm-hmm. is completely the opposite. Started a bit more slowly and done the slow burn, as Fergie's best teams used to do, as Pep's teams do. First half of the season, just stick in, you know, you're in the top four, you're close enough not to fall out of the race, and then you turn on. And we're in March. Like, we're in March and Arsenal are just getting better. They've scored, 30 goals in the last three games or something?
It's ridiculous. You've scored as many goals in like five games as Man United have all season. It's ridiculous.
I didn't know that stat, but I'm not surprised. Like,
I just made that up, but I'm pretty sure it's accurate.
I'm sure it is too. So, I have to give the man his flowers. The job he's doing is, whether honestly, he wins the league or not, it's something else. Because all you can do these days, unless you are City, all you can do is compete and be there. That's all you can really hope to do. No, if you pull it off, amazing. And if you don't, you know, you don't.
I agree with you. And I would add that as much as I still think my mind, I'm like, is his contribution, is it a £65 million transfer? Could it have been used somewhere else? That said, if he does pull this off, to me, I know people call Pep a genius and this other person a genius and whatever a genius. This would be a representation of genius if this leads to the ultimate trophy. Because, look, there's nothing that Pep Guardiola has done that I've seen so far that I was like, I didn't see that coming. Like, maybe John Stones' new-ish hybrid role-ish. But, like, there's nothing that he's done that I'm like, this is completely out the box that, like, I couldn't imagine this tactically. You know?
Sure.
Like, he's using Haaland and playing like almost a 4-4-1-2, like a 4-4-1-1, basically. Like, even before, like, he had Aguero and then he had, what's his name? Jesus coming popping. There's nothing that surprised. It's like the way they play, sure, fine, interesting. But he hasn't done this. Like, Havertz is a false nine, I get it, but he's even more than a false nine. He's a false nine, he's a false eight, he's a false, like, 10, he's a false everything. Like,
yeah,
that's different.
Genuinely, he's not really even playing a position. He's doing a role which involves multiple things, but it positionally, it's one of the most fluid things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. So, I'm interested to see how this works. Jorginho against Sheffield United, interesting. It worked. I hate Jorginho. And I really can't stand that he's doing really well. But
yeah,
the running is working. Amazing. Like, he's just getting the most out of everyone in that squad, and that's a scary thing. That's when it's really scary. When, like, Trossard comes off the bench and scores goals. If Jesus is off the bench and he's buying in, like, when these things start to happen, it's very scary for the rest of the league.
So. Especially when you add essentially one set piece goal every game. They're smashing set pieces.
This is the other thing. He's found a way. I'm giving way more props than I want to, but he's found a way to do this fluid possession. Like, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. I feel he's done tiki-taka, gegenpress, and route one all in one mix. I've never seen that before on a football pitch.
This is what happens when you are Basque, play for Barcelona, have, you know, Pep Guardiola as your, like, idol and mentor, and spend 7 to 10 years under David Moyes. This is true. This is the monster that gets created.
His entire career in one.
That Britain has created. It's the melting pot, birdie.
This is the truest thing I've ever heard. Oh my God. Yeah, that sums him up perfectly.
Yep. Yep. All right. Better leave it there. This has been wonderful. We will, you know, as we always say, try to do it again soon. But until then, goodbye for now.
Danke.
Bitte.